Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up in a few moments, a brief look at the pontificate of Paul VI, soon to be beatified by Pope Francis. A feature focusing on St. John Paul II, Catholic priest in communist Poland, shining the spotlight on the statue of Our Lady Consoler of the Afflicted, hidden away in a Roman church. Marian hymns to mark this month of May. But first, I'd like to bring you a report on the weekly general audience of Pope Francis with pilgrims from across the world. For this, let's join Emma McCarthy.
Continuing his series on the gifts of the Holy Spirit Wednesday, Pope Francis spoke of the gift of fortitude in times of trial. Tens of thousands of pilgrims and visitors had queued since dawn outside St. Peter's Square to attend the audience. Despite a strong and chill wind blowing from the north, the Pope spent over half an hour touring among them in his open-topped jeep, blessing children, greeting the elderly, embracing the sick. A gospel passage was proclaimed in the main languages before the Holy Father began his catechesis in Italian.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, buongiorno.
He said, "Let us thank the Lord for these Christians who are hidden saints among us, ordinary everyday people who carry on their lives in faith, who fight for their families and educate their children despite the difficulties that life can sometimes present them with. These are people who open their hearts to the Holy Spirit," he concluded, "who fills them with the gift of God's fortitude, the strength to carry on."
Most Holy Father.
The Holy Father's catechesis was then summarized for English-speaking pilgrims.
We receive the strength to do God's will, in spite of our own natural weakness and limitations. The Holy Spirit enables us to remain faithful amid every difficulty.
Saluto tutti i pellegrini di lingua inglese presenti a questa udienza. Dio vi benedica.
God bless you all.
I'm Emma McCarthy.
All our thanks there go to Emma McCarthy. Moving on in the broadcast, on Saturday, May the 10th, Pope Francis approved the promulgation of the decree for the cause of beatification of one of his predecessors to the See of Peter, Pope Paul VI. The beatification ceremony is scheduled to take place on October the 19th, 2014. But who exactly was this 20th century pope elected on June the 21st, 1963? And whose pontificate lasted 15 years. Stay tuned.
Pope Paul VI was elected as the 261st successor of Peter on the 21st of June 1963. His family name was Montini. The crowds in St. Peter's Square cheered at the news that this man, full of contradictions, baffling yet brilliant, austere yet personable, enigmatic yet firm in his authority, had been chosen to lead the Catholic Church at a crucial time in its history, finding himself, as he did, with the delicate task of closing and implementing the Second Vatican Council. According to American William Wakefield Baum, created cardinal by this pope, this holy man was not always understood.
He was very gentle, and he was a gentleman. Perhaps the world didn't quite understand him.
The world Paul VI lived in was a changing world, the same inhabited by America's first Catholic president, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, with whom he'd met less than 2 weeks into his pontificate.
Standard of living for you citizens.
But while the young American president's world was modern, vital, and projected into the 21st century, the newly elected pope's world was deeply anchored into the past, rife with pomp and circumstance. A situation Paul VI was determined to change, when, in a symbolic gesture, he cancelled one of the Catholic Church's centuries-old traditions by giving away the Triple Crown. And again, when this last pope ever to be crowned brought it upon himself to become the first pilgrim pope.
A humble pilgrimage.
But despite these gestures of hope, the decade and a half of his pontificate was also marked with a string of tragic events that were to change the face of the world. The assassination of US President John Fitzgerald Kennedy only months after their encounter in the Vatican. The war in Vietnam. The Cultural Revolution in China, the Six-Day War in the Middle East, the entry of the Soviet troops into Prague, situations of conflict for which Pope Paul VI had anticipated an impelling plea for peace in October 1965.
Jamais plus la guerre, jamais plus la guerre.
As the late Cardinal John Foley recalled.
It was the first visit of a pope to the United Nations. Even some of the people from communist states felt the power of what he was saying.
Now we've discovered more about the 20th century pope to be beatified by Pope Francis, why not take a look at one of the popes who was recently canonized by him in St. Peter's Square, a feature which includes the witness of some of those who knew him, as well as clips of recorded sound of this new saint, John Paul II, from our Vatican radio archives. And that's exactly how we begin, with his words at the beginning of his pontificate in English. Stay tuned.
Sometimes we may wish for a kind of life that is easier than the one we have. But in the providence of God, a different life does not mean a less important life.
We were forbidden to have any culture, any education whatsoever outside elementary education. And we had schools and universities in clandestinity, including university and maturity exams and concentration camps.
That was the world the future pope grew up in, the same one remembered by Polish Countess Wanda Jabuszyckańska.
As a young bishop and passed the Czechoslovakian border, he was arrested by the Czechoslovak police. He likes very much the mountains, and oh yes, and he used to go a lot with the students. And they called him uncle because sometimes he couldn't even show he was a priest. He just went with them as a good uncle.
I would like to offer my greetings and my blessing not only to you, but to all your colleagues throughout the world.
And when the newly elected pope met with the press for the first time in his pontificate, a mysterious lady cried out, "Wujek!" Uncle in Polish. Professor Stanisław Grigiel, a one-time personal friend of Karol Wojtyła, was at that press conference.
Il Papa passa, ma non la vede, e lei, non sapendo cosa fare, gridò, zio, in polacco. E lui subito.
Journalists at the press conference were startled by this Polish lady who suddenly addressed the Pope as uncle. What they didn't know was that this was a common way of addressing a Catholic priest in communist Poland, where to identify him openly as father was far too risky. The mystery lady had taken part in one of the secret retreats held by Uncle Wojtyła up in the mountains. In those years of religious intolerance, discretion became the price of religious survival. We were forced to keep such activities secret because the police were always on the lookout for us. Had they found out what was really going on, we would all have had to pay a very high price.
Ma sempre nascondendosi perché era vietato e la polizia ci cercava e questo era pericoloso.
This was the scenario in which the young Karol Wojtyła began his priestly life. His personal life prior to this had taught him to live with suffering.
I don't remember very well his mother because she died when we were still little. The much older brother who died when we were about 11 or 12. The brother was a doctor, medical doctor.
Jerzy Kluger went to school in Badovice with Lolek, as the future pope was familiarly known.
And contracted scarlatin fever, scarlet fever.
Scarlet fever.
Yes, and died. It was a big tragedy. And, you know, he came only a few years after his mother died. And they were left in two of them, the father and the son. And father was then already retired from the Polish army. So he lived with his son there in that little flat near to the church, and was teaching, was sacrificing his whole life to that boy.
Lei ha menzionato il millennio, Papa del millennio. Penso che le esperienze che si chiamano oggi Auschwitz e Colima.
I believe that what makes him so much the Pope of the third millennium is his experience of suffering, the fact that he was touched so personally by the era in which he lived. Many of his close friends at school were tortured, deported to Siberia, or interned in concentration camps. It was this indirect experience of Auschwitz or Coema that inspired him to want to save others from suffering, to defend the rights of the human person.
No one born into this world is free from human frailty, whether it be physical, emotional, or spiritual. Each of us must personally come to terms with this frailty.
We don't talk very often about it. I mean, he, I suppose, wants to avoid this because, for me, those years are really very painful, those memories. I mean, I'm Jewish. My father was the last president of the Jewish community in Wadowice. And during the war, we did a tremendous mistake that we went into the army, that means my father and myself, and my mother, my sister, and the grandmother. They were left there. We thought that the Germans won't do anything to them because they're women. Instead, they all died in Auschwitz.
The Cardinal Archbishop Krakow took me personally to Auschwitz. He accompanied me. On many other occasions, he would arrange for me to go here and there to see this and explore that. But he took me personally to Auschwitz and spoke to me about it. He understood fully what Auschwitz was, and even the symbolism of it. And we went together and we knelt and prayed together in that spot.
American Cardinal William Wakefield Baum was one of the cardinals who took part in the conclave that elected the Polish Pope. He cherished memories of time spent with Cardinal Wojtyła in Poland only months before he was elected Pope.
Cardinal Archbishop of Krakow was the preacher of the day, and he preached this magnificent, stirring homily, delivered with great passion. I couldn't understand Polish, but there was a priest always with me to interpret, so I knew what he was saying. He was encouraging these working men to be true to their faith and to stand tall and be courageous. He was a great defender of the rights of the working man, of ordinary citizens, vis-a-vis the powers of this world, the political powers, especially in Poland. It was not a revolutionary speech, but it was a speech that was meant to put steel into the minds, the hearts of these working Polish men. That day there were at least 300,000 of them present for this great mass in a field. So that, of course, gave me another insight into his personality. Cardinal Wojtyła of Krakow was one of the most prominent cardinals in the world, and much admired, looked up to, I'd say, by his brother cardinals.
Annuncio vobis
Gaudium Magnum. Habemus Papam.
There was more than one session of the conclave, but I was fortunately on St. Peter's Square when the announcement was made. It was one of those wonderful October evenings that you get in Rome. A beautiful, cloudless sky. By that time, it was 8 o'clock or so, it was getting dark, dusk, and St. Peter's Square is...
Vatican journalist Arthur Baum.
Impression, you can only know anyone who's actually seen it. And there again, the conclave ended. In that atmosphere, we were told that once more we had a new pope. And we listened intently for his name, Karol, Charles. And then came the name Wojtyła.
Eminentissimum ac reverendissimum Dominum, Dominum Carolum, Sancte Romane Ecclesiae, Cardinalem Wojtyła.
And that left us all completely floored. We thought, someone from Africa? Who could it be? And it took some time for the news to get round that it was actually a man from Poland. And then he himself came out and made his first speech to the people and used the words himself. It says, this time they've chosen a pope who comes from afar. And he went on and said, but I'll do my best now to speak to you in your Italian language. And he corrected it and said, no, in our Italian language. If I make mistakes, you can correct me. And that sort of set the tone, which everyone knows now from his pontificate.
Anche non so se potrei bene spiegarmi nella vostra, la nostra lingua italiana, se mi sbaglio. Se mi sbaglio mi corrigerete.
And it's with these words of Saint John Paul II at the beginning of his pontificate that I'd like to end this feature I put together for you. With a change of subject and tone, I'd now like you to join me and my professor of fine arts, Breda Ennis, in a Roman church. I'm in a very exotic place today, a very sacred place as well, Santo Stefano del Cacco. I'm here with Breda Ennis, who teaches fine arts here in Rome. Breda, we're going to talk about a statue of Our Lady holding baby Jesus. It's a very elaborate statue in a glass case with a damask background, and Our Lady is dressed in a blue robe and elaborate dress underneath. She's crowned, and baby Jesus is standing up in her hands and is crowned as well. Yes. Breda, this dates back to when? It's Our Lady, a consoler of the afflicted. I read that on a holy card.
Yes, this is a very special and very venerated image, because it was here in the church in 1627. So the actual origin of it, we don't really know. And it's a painted wooden statue with silk robes. But as you can see, it reminds you vaguely of the Madonna of Prague for some reason. And there is a story related to this particular statue that the night before Napoleon invaded Rome, the statue cried. The tears were seen on the face of this Madonna. So ever since then, people have come here constantly to pray for the afflicted. And the Madonna, who represents pain and sorrow and physical difficulties, etc. So I don't think so many people in Rome know about this, because almost every church in Rome has some Madonna dear to their hearts. But as you can see also, the type of crown that she has on her head and the one on the head of the baby Jesus is an oriental type of crown more than the types we're used to, the European ones.
She's holding something in her hands, isn't she?
It is her sceptre. But what's very strange is the formality of of the way she's dressed. She's dressed like she's going to a ball. It's like a ball gown in a certain sense, or a regal, the robes of a queen at a very important event.
There's jewels in the gown.
Yes, and they're real. They're also real. And also the child, the baby Jesus, is standing almost like a doll. And again, with the same kind of robe that she's wearing and the same kind of crown. So he's a mini version, at least physically, in terms of the way they're robed, of the mother. It's a very, very odd. Also, if you look at the eyes, too, of the statue, the eyes seem to be floating off into the distance. Many of the Madonna statues tend to look at you straight on and with strong eyes, etc. This here looks, it's looking beyond, very similar to what you would have had in works done in the Byzantine period. And yet this is obviously not a Byzantine piece, but there's some echoes. I can't put my finger on it. It's just a feeling. It's an emotion of the Byzantine. Maybe it's the way she's standing, the formality of her stance, the hands out with no particular expression, but you feel that whatever expression you need to find, you will find there. So there's a certain mobility to the immobility of this face. It's set very nicely in an altar, Baroque style, with Corinthian columns, and again, as you can see, set into the green marble at the back. She looks like she's inside the frame of a painting, a niche of Damask. So it's quite a luxurious piece. But at the same time, you don't get the feeling that it's ostentatious.
What's the spiritual meaning of something like this?
It's intercession. Always when you have the Madonna representing something like this, or whether it's the souls in purgatory or afflicted, it's an intercession for one's own health, essentially. This would attract a lot of people for a lot of suffering, also mental suffering, not only physical suffering. It's nice to be able to contemplate a figure so gracious, elegant, and at the same time keeps a distance that's necessary for you to be able to send over the whatever messages you want to be sending up to the heavens. You know? But I think it's one of the most mysterious churches in all of Rome.
You were listening there to Professor of Fine Arts Breda Ennis, who's currently teaching at the American University of Rome. Warm thanks to her. Finally, let's join Monsignor Philip Whitmore on some Marian notes in the next of his musical meditations.
Across, Latin greeting for backward girl, three letters. Are you someone who likes doing crosswords? And do you like what we in England call cryptic crosswords, the sort where the clue is really obscure and you have to uncover a hidden meaning before you can work out what it's getting at? Back in the 9th century when the Ave Maristella was written, that's the hymn we've been listening to, I don't suppose crossword puzzles had been invented. But the people who wrote the words of Latin hymns were the sort of people who would have been very good at crosswords. They liked word patterns. I'll give you an example. If you take the word Ave and spell it backwards, you end up with Eva. Now I can put you out of your misery and tell you the answer to the crossword clue I gave you at the beginning. Ave is a Latin greeting meaning hello or hail, as we sometimes translate it. And it's also a girl's name, Eva, spelt backwards. Latin greeting for backward girl, Ave. There you have it. Now, I expect you're wondering what all this has to do with this week's hymn. Let me explain. The fathers of the church love to talk about Our Lady as the new Eve. I told you they liked word patterns, and they like to find patterns in the scriptures as well. St. Paul draws a parallel between Christ and Adam. St. Paul explains how Christ restored through his death and resurrection what Adam had lost through his sin. Through Adam's sin, we all fell from grace. through the merits of Christ, we were all restored and raised to share in his abundant new life. The fathers of the church took that parallel between Adam and Christ a step further. They drew another parallel between Eve and Mary. They said that Eve, tempted by the serpent, prepared the way for Adam's fall. But Mary, responding to the angel, conceived in her womb the Christ child who would restore what Adam had lost. Do you remember the angel's greeting to Mary? Hail, full of grace. Ave Maria, gratia plena. The story of redemption began with that word Ave, reversing the story of the fall, which had begun with Eva, or Ave spelt backwards. That's the kind of pattern the fathers of the church loved. I told you they'd have been good at crossword puzzles. Ave Maria Stella, Ave Maria. Ave Maria Stella means Hail Star of the Sea. And that's one of the many lovely titles we give to Our Lady. And of course, I've chosen a hymn to Mary because we're now in the month of May, when we always give her special honour. Verse 2 of this hymn actually spells out, in just a few words, the point I've been making. Sumens illud ave, mutans eve nomen, which means accepting that ave and changing or reversing the name of Eva. Sumens illud ave. I'm sure you know lots of hymns that use the Ave to address Our Lady. Whenever we greet her with that word, we're recalling the greeting the angel Gabriel used and making it our own. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with you. Hail, star of the sea. Hail, portal of the sky. Hail, queen of heaven. Next week, I'll be talking about some of the more recent hymns to Our Lady using those lovely titles. But for now, I'd like to leave you with a sumptuous arrangement of that haunting plain song Ave Maria Stella, made by the great 17th century Italian composer Claudio Monteverdi. It comes in his setting of Vespers of Our Lady. Show yourself our mother. He, your son, will hear your pleading for us. We can be quite sure of that.
Thanks there, as always, to Monsignor Philip Whitmore, a music historian who's currently rector of the Venerable English College here in Rome. And that's all I have time for today. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget, we'll be back again at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then. Meanwhile, should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.rv.va and then click on the English World icon, a website which will have a new look as from next week. You've been listening to the English programme of Vatican Radio. Laudetur Jesus Christus.